Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Well, it's good to be back here, back home from Africa after about a month in country. I think it's good because my body thinks it's 2 o'clock in the morning, so I'm a bit brain dead. But that isn't about to stop me from discussing some of my observations from Uganda in 2018. The thing I'd like to focus on is poverty. Why is it that people that live in homes with dirt floors, no electricity, no running water, no access to clean water, and dressed in tattered clothing seem to have a semblance of contentment, whereas people in the U.S. suffer from depression, addictions, and suicides? That's the conversation I want to have today.
I think it's never been more appropriate, Charlie, as we're trying to define who we are and what our place is in the world here. I welcome your observations.
Well, let's see. I have several. I was in Uganda for about a month, and I had 2 days off and worked 12 to 14 hours a day. And as you know, I'm a volunteer, so I don't get paid for that. But I met with several government officials, prime ministers, cabinet members, and several people doing that are supporting our work. And so I want to talk a little bit about Wells of Life and Uganda. We've spoken of Wells of Life several times on the podcast.
Remind people, if this is the first time they've heard, that we can go back and listen to some, but just tell us real quickly what Wells of Life does.
Wells of Life supplies clean drinking water to the rural villages of Uganda, and we drill water wells. One well will give 1,000 people water for up to 25 years, and we've drilled now right at 400 wells, which means 400,000 people have access to clean water that didn't have access before. And these are in the very rural areas. Believe me, when I say rural, they are butt-bumping roads. They're not paved roads when we're going back. In Uganda, in spite of the squalor that hundreds of millions of people live in Uganda, in these rural villages, the greatest need of all needs is clean drinking water. In Uganda, only about 34% of people living in rural areas even have access to clean drinking water. Otherwise, they drink from the same disgusting, dirty water that animals drink in and defecate in, and they will fill up their jerry cans, which are, a jerry can is a 5-gallon plastic, made of heavy-duty plastic, that they fill up, and they will walk miles to get this water.
And what does that do for the women of the village? You've talked about that before. So again, there's no water in the village. So you got to walk miles to collect it and put it on your head and walk back. And, of course, that's a woman's job in traditional African society, which means what?
Well, that's what we did. That's what we assumed until we did an extensive baseline study. And we studied who is actually, they call it fetching the water. And we thought it was women and young girls. Women are 29% of women are doing the fetching of the water. 13% girls are fetching the clean water, but it's 33% boys.
Oh, wow, that's interesting.
That was new news for us. We just conducted a major study with 580 surveys and in 6 sub-counties in Africa to discover facts that we assume to see what is true. And this clean water is where Wells of Life come in. We drill clean water wells that I just said serve 1,000 people for about 25 years, and we've drilled 400 wells serving more than 400,000 people. And do you know that according to the World Health Organization, check this, the infant mortality rate in Africa, not Uganda, but all of Africa, exceeds 50%.
Say that again. That's hard to believe.
That the infant mortality rate in Africa exceeds 50%. That means more than half the children will die before they're 5 years old. And the largest contributor to infant mortality is waterborne diseases.
Drinking bad water.
Drinking bad water causes diarrhea, and they die largely of diarrhea.
Dehydration and everything else.
And then, yes, because they don't have the water to replace from the diarrhea. And if they haven't died, if they live, they're sick. So, you know, it's not like you have a dying child and a really healthy child. You have a sick child.
Well, or they are underdeveloped. They're not just
stunted
melded.
Growth. Yeah. There is stunted growth is one of our mission statements, part of our mission statement, to help with stunted growth.
They never grow right, and they bear that scar, that disability forever.
So for that reason, Wells of Life digs water wells and empowers. Our thing now is empowering communities to avoid contamination of clean water by educating them and working with the communities to practice proper sanitation, like latrines instead of open defecation, because open defecation will sink through
into the water table
and will go into the water table. And also sand hygiene, mostly hand washing. Do you know, in Africa, a really fascinating statistic is that the number one cause of diarrhea is lack of hand washing.
What? Just something that's this is what I know what you're saying is true, but I got to believe that most people like me listening to it, hard to believe that half of the children in Africa are going to die from something as simple as lack of clean water, lack of not washing their hands properly, and all the things that come out of this.
Yes,
this is simple stuff. People aren't, half of Americans aren't dying because of diarrhea and they don't wash their hands.
Yeah, we teach the people to wash their hands before they eat because they're living in dirty areas, and so their hands are very dirty. Their hands are very contaminated. We're not used to washing our hands before I eat.
We wash
our hands
handling
after.
Wild animals. We're not walking in dirt. We're not walking through mud and open sewage and whatnot.
Exactly. And so we're in a process of a process called WASH. It's water, sanitation, and hygiene. And this, what we do is it's a water chain. So people come and collect water from the, we call them boreholes, they're wells, and they collect the water from the borehole. Well, they put it into a contaminated jerry can. Mm-hmm. So they put it into a contaminated container. They take it, and then they dump it into a contaminated storage area, and they drink it out of dirty glasses and dirty hands. And so it's almost not doing any good at all. You're almost right back to the contamination. And so that's what this WASH program is. We teach the people and we work. It's community empowerment, to where the community decides they want to clean this thing up because we give them demonstrations about the contamination. And it's about a five-month process, because what we're doing is we're changing a culture.
Yeah.
We're changing a mindset. You know, you're not used to washing your hands. Why do I need to wash my hands?
Or caring about whether the containers are clean, or
yes,
how many people touch it,
yes,
or how it's stored, or if it's,
and that
know.
the water source needs a fence around it, because you want to keep cattle. Because what people are doing without fences is they block up. There's a draining channel that comes out of our water access point.
Mm-hmm.
And they will block up the draining end of it, which is only about 4 inches wide, block it up, fill it up, bring their cattle in, and let their cattle drink out of the water, and their cattle are defecating there. So it's going right
poisoning
into
poisoning the well.
It's poisoning the well, exactly. And
And that was maybe this is a harsh statement, but when I went to Mexico a couple times years ago, people said, "Of course, all as Americans, we can't drink the water." I'm like, "Why don't they have clean water?" Well, the problem is just that. There's clean water underground, but it gets all contaminated because of the large number of people and animals pooping all over the place and contaminating this stuff. And so the groundwater is filled with parasites and bacteria and all sorts of other things. So unless you boil it, unless you bring it in from somewhere else, the water at its source is bad.
Yeah, well, we have 24 water bottles when we go there, and you brush your teeth and you pour water out of a bottle onto your toothbrush and you gargle with the water, and you don't drink the water because you don't want to get ill.
Because there's waterborne bacteria and parasites and all this stuff that's been brought in because, again, there's no sanitation. So the source itself becomes polluted by the animals and the people.
So this WASH program is just starting. We're starting it in 2019, and it is a major program. But because it takes so long, we drill 100 wells per year. That means we're providing clean water to 100,000 people per year. And that is saving, we've saved over 50,000 lives of children under five. But this because of the change of mindset and the cultural change, it takes a minimum of 5 months. So we can't completely do the entire WASH program with everyone, so we can only do 20 villages a year, yet there is a water component that will do 25% to 40% of the work that we will do with everybody. But it is a time-consuming process, yet it is we want to create a model that other NGOs can follow. Now what's curious, Paul, is I wanted to do this podcast on, and I think I've titled the podcast Deep Poverty, Is It Physical or Emotional? And you know what is really surprising, and I think it surprises everybody in third world, well, no longer do we use those terms, in developing worlds, developing countries, in the face of overt poverty, the people seem to embrace some sort of combination of happiness and acceptance of the lot they have in life, and they appear to be surprisingly happy people in the midst of what we would call horrible situations. And I just find this, and I don't know if they're happy to see what's called Mazungos, which are white people, and they're happy to see white people because they know white people are going to bring them some kind of aid. But the people accept their lot in life and just continue without much mental disorder or mental problems. Woes of Life is by far and away, I would believe, the number one contributor to clean water in Uganda. That nobody has drilled 400 wells. The government is just blown away by us, and is excited to work with us, and we certainly need, we have the tools, we have the technology, but you know what we don't have, Paul?
What's that?
Money. And so.
And that's another point that we all struggle with. You're not talking about a lot of money.
No, one well that will give 1,000 people water for 25 years costs
$6,000. $6,000?
Not $18,000.
Saves a village for 20 years.
Yes. And 100 in our model, 100% of that $6,000 goes to the well. None of it goes to operating expenses or overhead. We have an entirely separate budget for that. So if someone wants to give to Wells of Life at wellsoflife.org, they can give their $6,000 or give some money.
And that's what appealed to me. From the minute we started talking about this and you started talking about the work you're doing, I got it. You know, Africa seems like a never-ending crisis. I give money to feed the children. I watch the terrible videos, the swollen bellies, and next year they're still bad. They're still dying. Nothing ever seems to be an endless. I seem to throw money. We all, I think, have this horrible feeling that it's impossible to change, and no amount of money can make a difference. And I never see my dollar do anything except disappear into that black hole.
Do you know what Martin Luther King said?
Mm-mm.
He says, if you can't do great things, do small things great.
Yeah. And that's what you guys are doing.
We're doing small things great. And, you know, we have a goal. We have a vision of a clean water Uganda by 2038 is our vision, that we will have a clean water, except, you know, what the population explosion is just crazy. So we'll see how that turns out. But that is our goal, is providing clean water. And the people, Paul, the people are so grateful. You talk about meaning in your life and contentment in your life. Do you remember that we've had the talks of me on this website, on this podcast, where I've talked about boredom and uselessness? And right after I retired,
yeah,
I couldn't find anything that gave me meaning. This, in my final chapter of life, you know, I'm 68 years old, although that's stretching it because I'm 69 in 2 weeks or 3 weeks.
Happy birthday.
But I'll keep it at 68.
We'll hang on to 68 as long as we can.
Yeah. But it has given me a meaning, it has given me a purpose, and it's given me where I'm actually making, I see the difference that I'm making.
And you know what it's done for me is I watch you take this journey, and I think it's, I expect I speak for others listening as well. It's given me hope that the final act can be maybe the most meaningful act, certainly meaningful act.
Yes, it is.
Rather than this assumption I had, too often I use a movie metaphor, but I feel like as you get older, it's one long fade to black, you know, where slowly the scene just sort of fades out and you become kind of more and more irrelevant and less meaningful in what you do. Your kids are grown up. Your business is, you're out of business. You have less opportunity somehow as a male in America to feel like you're making a difference the older you get.
That's where Bob Buford wrote a book, it was probably 20 years ago, but it was called Halftime.
Mm.
The subtitle was what really, really sold it. It was From Success to Significance.
Yeah.
And as you get older, you know, you've worked on success in your younger years, in your older years is significance.
Boy, if we could make that true for more and more Americans, what a difference that would be. Talk about your core issue of contentment and feeling like life matters.
Life really does matter. And, you know, with Wells of Life, we believe water matters more than anything else, because you can live with just about anything, but you cannot live without water.
Yeah, you can go for food without food longer than you can without water.
Oh, yeah, water. You've got, I think it's about 7 days.
Wow.
I think it's about 7 days, and you are no longer living. But what really does surprise me is the people seem to be happy, friendly people, but they are struggling people. You know, it is not, they are not without struggle, but they seem to accept their lot in life and work through that. And they don't have the troubles that I want to talk to in the second half of our show.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about some of our
issues. Well, let's take a quick break and come back, and you can delve into some of those. You've given us an overview of what you saw. Now you're going to make some observations and comparisons between their lives and ours.
Yes.
When we get back, right after this. right, we're back with Charlie Hedges, Wells of Life, as he explores, tells us more about the next chapter he just took in his life, working with Wells of Life, and just coming back from your second trip. This is your second trip to Africa.
Third trip.
Oh, third trip, okay.
Third trip. It's going to be about two trips a year, maybe three trips a year, now that I'm in charge of this WASH program. That's, the Water Sanitation and Hygiene Program.
Before you tell us your observations, if I had met you 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and asked and walked into your life as some soothsayer, some seer of the future, and said, Charlie, I see a change in your life. I see you not as the successful CEO coach that you are. You've done that. I see you walking through the rural areas of Africa helping people. What would you have said?
You know, Paul, I'm the kind of personality that giving is part of my life. And if I believed that you had some kind of
gift,
some kind of revelation, I would have seen it. I would have seen that because I knew I had deeds to do. But in my second half of life, I knew that something else was going to happen in my second half of life. I just didn't know what, and I had until. And do you know how this thing all began? What's crazy is it began with Nick Jordan. We had Nick Jordan on last March.
Happenstance, right?
And it was an interview here with Nick Jordan, and the next thing I know is I'm funding Wells. Then after that, I find out I'm a trustee to the NGO in Uganda.
Totally got pulled in.
And then in October, I become vice president of the board. And then by February, I'm in charge of WASH.
All from a radio show you were doing, but more than that, that provided you an opportunity to meet people that wouldn't walk into your life normally, and being open to interested enough to meet them and open enough to seize the opportunity.
Well, at the risk of sounding too religious, I believe this was a call of God. I didn't have a choice. This was not something where, what do you want to do? What do you not want to do? I think I've been called of God twice in my life. And, you know, one was to enter seminary and learn the Bible and learn that well. And this was my second call.
Wow.
And you know, I'm fortunate to have a family. I mean, I left Paul and I missed my son's 26th birthday and my wife's 65th birthday. Now she's going to be really happy I told her age.
55th. We meant 55th, right? Yeah.
But I didn't miss my anniversary, which is coming up in 3 days.
Goodness, Charlie. There's only so many of these you can sacrifice.
Yeah, well, you know, my wife is so wonderful that she believes in service and she believes in doing good. And so she really, and she knows my passion for service and doing good and not spending everything on me. Although, you know, I'm certainly no martyr. I mean, I like nice houses and nice cars.
You wear some nice clothes. Yeah.
I've got a clothes addiction. So we've talked about Uganda, and it leads me to a different kind of poverty. And it's the poverty in the United States. Now, I don't want to dismiss, check this out, I don't want to dismiss 19 million Americans also live in the deepest of poverty, homeless, hungry, living under bridges. So deep poverty is definitely a part of the American life, but it's not the norm.
And you know what else is? Because we've done a lot of shows on homelessness in the network here. Big issue here in Orange County, and one of the few I found that unites left and right. Whether you're right wing or left wing, everybody says we got to do something about this. So, here's the observation I made: poverty is here, but it's maybe the word is marginalized, maybe the word is hidden, but it's I can miss it. I can drive around it. They're down in the storm drains. They're over in some part of town I just avoid.
Right.
They're not We don't live in a highly urbanized center, too many urbanized areas, so I don't see them out in the open. They're hidden right. from my view. I can certainly see them if I find them if I want to, but if I choose to, I can avoid seeing them and kid myself into thinking they don't exist. I suspect it's not that way in Africa.
No, because it's because you're not talking 95%, you're talking 65%.
Yeah. So it's a bigger problem and it's more visible.
Yes, it's extremely more visible. Just the clothing that people wear and in the rural area, in the urban areas, the clothing is not, just you can see the poverty.
And, tattered, worn.
Yes, yes.
Old, soiled, right.
But the great majority of, even though we said it wasn't a percentage, but there was 19 million Americans that live in the deepest of poverty. But the great majority of Americans, we live, compared to Ugandans, we live in great wealth. And I know we've heard that and we say, oh, no, we're not great wealth.
Yeah, but, look at my bills, look at my problems, look at what I got to deal
with. But you don't live in dirt floors. Mm-hmm. You have electricity, you have water, you have some clothes. You may not be wearing Armani's, but you have decent clothes to wear. You typically have some form of transportation. And you're living, a decent life.
Somebody said it to me this way once. When you live in extreme poverty, your first and last thought, your most predominant thought all day is, how am I going to make it through today?
Today, yes. There is no such thing as...
There's no tomorrow.
No such thing as tomorrow. No such thing as
tomorrow.
How am
I going to eat? Where am I going to sleep? How am I going to survive? How am I going to be safe? Those questions from the minute you wake up to the minute you go to sleep are foremost on your mind.
And those are the questions that Wells of Life we're trying to deal with. Now that we've gone into this, I've mentioned this water sanitation and hygiene program, we're trying to deal with that. That is not simply providing water, but we're changing a whole culture so they have a clean compound. They have a clean community.
Right.
That they can live longer.
And take off the table as many of those issues as you can. You're not going to worry about thirst today. You're not going to worry about sickness as much. You're not going to worry about children dying as often.
Yeah, well, one of the things we do is that we give them a cost comparison.
A typical American tool. A cost comparison of...
Of what it costs to... build a latrine, and then we build kitchens next to the house. And believe me, a kitchen is just a wood shack.
Yeah.
That has ventilation. You have a latrine, hand-dug latrine. You have dishwashing and drying apparatus. So, the dishes are not put on a carpet on the floor. And they're picking up that, and you don't by having the latrine more than 50 meters, which would be 150 feet plus, away from the house. You don't have flies in the feces that are coming and landing. As a matter of fact, one of the tools we use to show them, because they don't believe the flies, and so what we do is that we take this is funny. We take feces and put it in a bottle of water, shake it up, and ask if anybody wants to drink it. And no one will want to drink it. And we say, well, that's what you're eating. Because the flies are in that feces, and they're bringing that feces and put it on their food.
Yikes.
And they say, sounds like we ought to build a latrine.
Yeah.
That has a lid. There's a certain element to it. But... back to America.
Before you finish that, so you said something, and I made a snarky comment, but I got to follow up. So when you walk into a village that's never thought like this, the assumption is everybody thinks logically. Everybody's used to this kind of cost comparison analysis that every American is taught, every businessman knows.
No, we're changing cultures. That's why it takes 5 months. one of the leading groups of it takes 9 months. We're trying to take 5 months, and we won't even drill a well until they have gone through our certification, that they have built the latrines, built the kitchens, built
really. The you don't just go in and build a well and say good luck on to the next village.
No. Now, we're doing 20 wash programs because that's all the time that we have and the resources we have.
Yeah.
But of the remaining 80, we're doing the water portion of wash, which is they're building a fence around the water source. They are cleaning jerry cans. They are, you know, cleaning dishes and doing some basic things, and that's only taking a week of training and a week of that they're committing to build that. And there's also a few other little minor things that we do, and then we will build a well.
Is it an epiphany, though? Is it an eye-opener for you and for them when you walk in and say what seems so obvious to us seems so unheard of to them?
Well, it's quite a process, because we go through the local authorities, and we will take what's called he's not really the mayor, but he's the district chairman. It's a title that's called an LC3, LC1 and an LC3. And we get their support, and when they come along and they support it, the community is very, very leadership oriented, and very rank means something, rank and title. Like my title is I'm simply a vice president of a board, which, you know, it's what does that mean? But in Africa, when they call me vice president, everybody is automatically paying attention to what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And, you know, because there's respect for title and position. But I want to get on the United States before we run out of time. As I had said earlier, a great majority of Americans live in, compared to Uganda, in great wealth. We have the basic necessities of life. And yet, we are an emotionally and spiritually poor people. I looked at some stats. For instance, 123 people per day commit suicide.
Wow.
123
here in the United States.
Yeah. In the United States, and that, and another 1,700 per day attempt suicide. So we have daily, the result is 45,000 suicides per year. You don't have 45,000 suicides in Uganda. And then we have another 40 million people suffering from depression and anxiety disorder. And add to that, 10% of our population agonizes from some kind of addictive behavior to drugs or alcohol or generally both of them. You know, so we have one kind of poverty that's a physical poverty, and then you have another kind of poverty in the United States that is an emotional poverty. And, you know, we've all been through it. You've been through it. I've been through
it. You We've know, talked about it in these shows, yeah.
That this emotional poverty. So, oh, did I leave my phone on? No, I didn't. I know where that was. Something. Oh, my phone's not on, but my computer's on.
There you go.
We'll deal with it. So, what's going on? What is poverty? In you know, the famous Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yeah.
In Africa, what we are dealing with is its first two levels. It's physiological and safety needs. But in the United States, it appears that we're suffering from the next two in Maslow's hierarchy, which describes belonging and esteem needs. Mm-hmm. And it seems that once we have become somewhat financially secure, the emotional deficits seem to raise their ugly heads. And I attribute this to, you know, I think I've said this several times on the show, but I attribute this to what is the so-called American dream, and that money and what it will buy you and that it will afford you contentment, which is a big lie. We know that the more toys we get, we love playing with the toy for a few days or a few months, but it doesn't give us contentment. It doesn't give us overall contentment. We still have that emotional, we still have that esteem needs, and we still have the need for to belong. And so it's a myth that the acquisition of stuff and toys will give me contentment and give me happiness. The Beatles said, money can't buy me love. I'm saying money can't buy you happiness and contentment. It can make it better. I'm not gonna lie to you.
Yeah.
You know, I've been rich and I've been poor and
better
rich,
being rich. Yeah.
And it's rich is better. You know, there's no
doubt.
Let
me ask you a question, because you've openly talked about your work with the 12-step programs and whatnot, and your involvement in them, and that background in with an addictive personality, perhaps, and dealing with people with addictions. It almost seems like our desire for goods can become an addiction.
Absolutely.
We think there's some, and I don't want to make it that simple, but certainly one of the causes of all addictions is you're trying to fill some empty hole within you. You're trying to fill it with sex, with love, with money, with booze, with drugs, or something here.
Absolutely. Great observation, Paul. That is a great observation that we have these emotional needs that seem, they don't surface when you're just barely trying to live.
Yeah. You don't have the luxury to worry about whether you're happy if you're just trying to stay alive today.
Yeah, and there's only, like you said, there's only today, there is not tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
And we worry about tomorrow like crazy.
Yeah.
We don't enjoy today. We worry about tomorrow. And so to me, the antidote to the myriad psychological maladies that lie somewhere in the finding acceptance of where you are in life, appreciate of what you have, and a sense of awe that surrounds you daily. That is, you know, that's called, you know, the new movement of mindfulness and presence. And when we catch the good that we have, like you and I sitting here discussing, what a privilege.
Yes.
You know, what an honor we can sit here being discussing how we can, I don't like to use the word change the world, but how we can impact the world and how we can impact
how we can people. We have the time and luxury to reflect on these things, as does our audience, who's obviously thankfully sharing this with us here today. They have the luxury to listen. I'm not sure everybody has the luxury to listen when you're trying to stay alive today.
You know, you know, on the plane back, I watched Wall Street, and Michael Douglas had a diatribe where he said, "Greed is good."
Yeah, right.
This is what we want.
That
greed is good.
Takeaway line from that movie. Yeah.
Yeah, and we live. You know, part of the human condition. I think greed is part of the human condition. I think that's part of being human, is greed, to want more and to always want more and to always have more. And
well,
it's the wise...
Well, because a desire motivates you, is if you want to be simple about it. Yeah.
But the great enlightened ones, you know, never talk about that. They never talk about acquiring more. They talk about giving and serving and accepting what we have right now.
There are two things. We do a lot of financial shows on the network, and there, more than any other place, they say there's only two things that motivate people: greed and fear. When you're making an investment, when you're trying to think of the next job, when you're trying to plan your future, you're either motivated by greed, I want more, or fear, I'm going to lose.
Yeah, what about a motivation of service? What about Jesus' words, it is better to give than receive? And I must say, I have definitely found that to be true.
So in Africa, what did you see? Are they still just motivated by greed and fear, or is it something?
They're motivated by survival.
Survival, right?
That's a whole different. That's
right.
A whole different thing.
Paradigm.
And we can and we can help. I mean, we really can. You know, we're not going to help an entire country, but we can help thousands of people. Like we provide 100 water wells per year. That's 100,000 people. That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
You know, Tustin, I just looked. I was shocked. I was driving to a place yesterday, and I saw a sign that had the population of Tustin, and it was 78,000 people. I never had any idea that Tustin
was
that large.
There's 3 million people in Orange County alone.
So that means we just changed Tustin.
Yeah.
We just gave Tustin drinking water.
Right. Everyone in Tustin.
That Tustin didn't have drinking water, but everyone in Tustin now has drinking water.
So we're motivated by fear and greed as Americans. They're motivated by survival. One thing that seems to be built into the American psyche is the desire for more. Our ancestors came here because they weren't satisfied where they were. They were subjected to, you know, discrimination. They were subjected to persecution. They were subjected to poverty.
Horrible things.
And that seemed to be the giant motivator that made most, I'm not talking about the Native Americans who were here already, but the rest of us who came here, seeking something better, which gave birth to this American dream. I can get something better, and my children can get even better than that. Do you see that in Africa, or what's the consensus view of life and society there?
Well, I think I can only speak of Uganda. I can't speak of other countries in Africa, but I think that it is still the primary goal is survival. And
is there a deep-seated desire to change? Are they welcome? Please help us, show us the way, or are you fighting culture, taboos, thousands of years that we've done it this way? And
not with water. When they have a problem with water, they are ecstatic that we are bringing them water. They're just absolutely ecstatic about that.
Because, for example, and another crisis that we've talked about on the show is HIV crisis, which obviously is larger in Africa than anywhere else.
Yeah, that's a different story.
And trying to get people to do something as simple as wear men to wear condoms. Not going to do it. It's not manly. It's not what my father did. It's not what I want to do. For women to use birth control. Forbidden, awful, can't do it. Culturally, taboos, other sorts of things. So you're fighting.
Well, it's also very very strongly Catholic. I know Uganda is very strongly
is
Catholic.
Is it? Okay.
And so that has some effect.
So lots of taboos, lots of cultural built-in notions that prevent change.
That's what I said. That's why it takes a minimum of 5 months for us to work on them, and then we come back and continue to monitor the work we've done, that they're keeping up with it, because we're talking culture change, that I don't believe that this is necessary.
Do they slip back into their ways? You come back and they're still washing dirty dishes, and they say, well, okay, so I do it most of the time. I don't know.
You know, I can't answer that, because we're just beginning the program in 2019. So ask me in another year, and right. I'll give you the results.
Okay. What other points do you want to get across here?
Yeah, because we just have a couple minutes left here. How about that, instead of, you know, we talked about greed and fear, and instead, it's a matter of believing that you already have a contented and meaningful life. It's an attitude. And so how about this? Perhaps it's not a matter of what you have, as opposed to the amount you give to needy.
Wow, boy, you're going to something much deeper than I was at here.
Yeah, but you know, there is great satisfaction in that. There is great satisfaction, and we give out books that show you communities that have changed, and the happy children and the happy people. Everybody that donates a well gets a book that reveals all of that.
But let me just ask you quickly. I was raised in nice upper-class suburbia. And yes, I'm a Irish Catholic. I was taught to think of others and give to the poor and all those good things. But giving wasn't driven into me as a child or around me. It was mostly getting. getting ahead, getting a job, getting a career, getting an education.
I know. It's the American, that's what I said. I said one of our greatest problems in the United States is the American dream.
Yeah. We all want to get.
It is good. There's nothing wrong with it, but once you get, what do you do with it? You don't try to, it's not that greed of getting more and more and more. It's the ability to serve other people. That is what our call in life is to love other people by first loving yourself and taking care of yourself and then giving to other people. And when you do that, you have a changed life. I spent nearly a month in Uganda meeting with high-level officials and creating strategies to prevent the contamination of clean water that we are working on. I worked 12 to 14 hours a day. I had 2 days off in a month. And I can't tell you that I have been more satisfied and more content with my life than ever. I am doing something that matters. And I want to tell the audience, I want to close with this. I want to tell the audience, and so can you. If you're interested in providing water, go to wellsoflife.org. It'll be in the show notes. And if it's not Wells of Life, I encourage you to find a place to give your talents and your treasures. Search your heart for a need in which you can best assist providing remedy. And I guarantee you will never be the same. Your question about meaning of life will go away because you are helping people. So I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in to the next chapter with Charlie. This has been a fun podcast for me.
Eye-opening for me.
Also, be sure to check out our website at thenextchapter.life. That's L-I-F-E. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. So bye for now.